Footprints in the Jungle, with Patricia Hodge, Geoffrey Whitehead and David Collings, and Dirk Bogard as the narrator.
I've always thought that the detective story is a most diverting and ingenious form of fiction, and I've regretted never having the skill to write one. On the one occasion when I was faced with a genuine murder mystery, however, I flatter myself that I solved the puzzle well ahead of the denouement. I was staying in Tanamera with the head of the police, a man called Gaze. No place in Malaya has more charm than Tanamera. It lies on the sea, and the sandy shore is fringed with casuarinas. The European quarter is trim and neat and clean, and the clubhouse faces the ocean. It's a spacious building, and it's usually pretty deserted. Most mornings you might find a couple of planters who come in from their estates on business and are downing a gin sling before starting back. It's on Wednesdays that there's a little more animation. The gramophone is set going in the large room upstairs, and people come in from the surrounding country to dance. There are sometimes as many as a dozen couples, and it's even possible to make up two tables of bridge. It was on just such a Wednesday that Gaze wrote me in to make up a form.
Mr. and Mrs. Cartwright.
Good evening.
Hello. Please sit down. Do you mind if my husband and I play together? It's no fun for us to win one another's money.
Of course not. A formidable lady. And more than competent at cards. No one who didn't love cards for their own sakes could shuffle a pack with such slickness.
Shall we cut for deal?
Of course. Will you do that, Cartwright? Oh, dear. Well, that's a bad beginning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there's no arguing with an ace. It seems as though fate has selected me to be dealer. Mm. Now, here's something that will interest you, Major Gaze. Uh-huh. Olive solved the mystery of the vanishing bicycle tires.
Oh.
You remember I told you that all our spares had suddenly disappeared. She happened to be in...
Mrs. Cartwright was somewhere in her 50s, though, in the East, where people age more quickly. It's difficult to tell their ages. She looked shrewd, but good-natured. Her mouth gave her a characteristic expression of caustic but tolerant irony. Here was a woman who knew her mind and was never afraid to speak it.
He told her who he'd bought them from. We've had to send him away, of course.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to take official police action?
Good gracious me, no. Do we, Theo?
It's more trouble than it's worth, Gaze. I dismissed the fellow on the spot. Is there anything to do? That's sufficient deterrent for the rest of the staff, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. I certainly have no inclination to pursue him any further. Actually, he was an excellent house servant.
Yes.
Poor man. Who was it who said, "I can resist everything except temptation"?
No, wasn't it Oscar Wilde?
Yeah. He had more than one brush with the law.
Yes, indeed.
Now, where temptation's concerned, far better to stick to the Lord's Prayer. Lead us not into it.
Yeah, I've always considered that a highly inappropriate request to make to the Lord, as if he would. It's the sort of remark better addressed to Satan.
I thought her a very agreeable person. She certainly played a strong game of bridge, backed by excellent teamwork from her husband. It was a pleasure to play with her. She had not only knowledge, but flair.
One club.
No bid.
One no trump.
Pass.
Three no trumps.
Pass.
Four no trumps.
Double.
Pass.
Pass.
Oh, sorry, partner. I don't know what's the matter with the cards tonight. Even when we have every card in the pack, we go down.
It can't be anything to do with your play, Major Gaze. It must be bad luck, pure and simple.
That's what I think.
Another rubber?
I don't think so, my dear. We must be on our way.
Mm-hmm. Good gracious. Is that the time?
Mm.
Mr. Bullen. Oh, Mr. Bullen, if you're going upstairs, please tell Olive we're leaving in a few minutes.
Did it take you long to get back to your estate?
The best part of an hour. Poor Theo has to be up at the crack of dawn.
Oh, well, we only come in once a week. It's the only chance Olive has of a little farm.
Oh, Daddy! You'll have them all thinking that you only come in on my behalf. Don't you believe it, everybody? They wouldn't miss their Brit for anything, would you, you dear old things?
Well, I certainly wouldn't. This is our daughter, Olive.
How do you do?
Hello. And quite right, Mummy. Wednesdays make a break for us all.
But life can't be all that gay for you out on an isolated estate.
It isn't. I sometimes get quite worried about
it. Oh, Daddy, you old fusspot. I can assure you that my time is pretty well filled. We go visiting during the week, don't we, Mummy?
Mm-hmm.
And I study every day.
Yet Olive is doing a course on English literature by correspondence.
Mm.
I read all her essays, but frankly, they're beyond me. Our tutor gives her very high marks, though. That's what counts. 87%, wasn't it, for the last one?
Oh, Daddy!
Come along, Olive, dear. Theo, will you go round?
I thought Cartwright looked old and tired, with his bald, shiny head, stubbly grey moustache and gold-rimmed spectacles. He said little, but he clearly enjoyed his wife's brand of repartee and adored his daughter. It was pleasing to see so solid an affection between two people who were almost elderly, and the strong family bond between them and their daughter.
Well, what do you think of the Cartwrights?
Oh, I like them. They must be a great asset in a place like this. They must be dull for the girl, despite what she says. A pity, really, isn't it? She has such vitality and high spirit. She's the image of her father, isn't she?
Oh, Cartwright isn't Olive's father.
Huh?
Well, Mrs. Cartwright was a widow when he married her. Olive was born 4 months after her father's death.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Olive's father was a planter called Reggie Bronson, manager of an estate up in Selland Town. I was stationed at Adol Lepe's at the time. In those days, Mrs. Cartwright wasn't a bad-looking woman. Ice colour, pretty blue eyes, a lot of dark hair. More brandy?
Yes, please. In the solid woman at the bridge table, I tried to see Mrs. Bronson as she was then. A slight young thing with graceful, easy gestures. She must have been charming with a pink and white skin and her hair carelessly dressed, brown and abundant. At that period, she would have worn a long skirt, a tight waist and a picture hat.
I hadn't seen her for nearly 20 years. I knew she was living somewhere in the Malay state, but it was a great surprise when I took this job and ran across her in the club. Rather a shock, really, to see her with a grown-up daughter. Made me realise how time had passed. I was a youngster when I first met her, and now here I am within 2 years of retirement. Makes you think, one.
I'm no chicken myself.
You haven't lived out east all your life. It ages you before your time. You're old at 50, and at 55, you're good for nothing but the scrap heap.
Did you recognise Mrs. Cartwright when you saw her?
Not at first. I couldn't quite place her. But the moment she spoke, I knew who she was. The marriage had evidently been a great success, and they were both obviously devoted to Olive and very proud of her. Theo especially.
Although she was only his stepdaughter.
Yes, even so. Mm. One thing did strike me as a bit odd. She called him Daddy, of course. He was the only father she'd ever known, but she hadn't taken his name. She signed her letters Olive Bronson.
Oh. And Bronson, what was he like?
Oh, a great big fellow, very hearty. Red face, red hair, beefy, you know. A fine athlete. Not much by way of conversation, rubber and sport mostly, I seem to recall. But typical public schoolboy, you know the type.
I did indeed. One of the most disconcerting things to the traveller is to see stout, middle-aged gentlemen with bald heads speaking and acting like schoolboys. You might almost think that no idea had entered their heads since they first passed through the Suez Canal. Though married and fathers and perhaps in control of a large business, they contrived to look upon life constantly from the standpoint of the sixth form. I know the type. Arrested development.
Mind you, he was no fool. He managed one of the best estates in the country. Generous, too, always ready to do anyone a good turn. Well, that's how Cartwright turned out. They'd been at school together. When Rubber took a toss and he lost his job, he wrote and asked for work. Brunson told him to come and stay till things got better, and Cartwright jumped at the chance. Brunson had to send him his fare money.
Oh. And Cartwright, what sort of man was he?
Oh, to tell you the truth, I never paid him much attention. He was pleasant and unassuming. He danced well, and the women rather liked that, but he also played billiards quite decently, and he wasn't bad at tennis. He just fell into our little groove.
Did he find work?
Well, there were no jobs going. He sometimes seemed rather depressed about it.
Well, how long did he stay with the Brunsons?
Over a year. Huh? I remember someone, well, the doctor's wife, I think it was, asking Mrs. Brunson if he didn't get tired sometimes of having a stranger in the house. Oh, no, she said. Theo's no trouble. We like having him, don't we, Reggie?
Well, haven't the Brunsons any children?
No. I don't know why they could have afforded it.
And then?
And then Brunson was killed.
Killed?
Murdered.
Good grief. Mm.
Four of us had been playing tennis. Mrs. Brunson, the doctor's wife, Sylvia Kendall, Theo Cartwright and I. Brunson wasn't with us. He'd cycled into the bank at Caballon.
Are you sure you're not too tired for bridge? Good heavens, of course not. Why should I be?
I was afraid the tennis might have been too much for you.
Oh, no. Will you deal, Major Gaze?
Of course. What sort of a day have you had, Cartwright?
Oh, nothing very much. Went out after tiffin to shoot pigeon.
Any luck?
Oh, I got half a dozen. They're very shy. You know, if Reggie got back late, I dare say he thought it wasn't worthwhile coming here. He's probably had a bath and gone to sleep in his chair.
It's certainly a good long ride from Caboulong. Mm.
He doesn't take the road, you know. He takes the shortcut through the jungle. It saves a couple of miles. Right, are we ready to play?
Oh, excuse me, I think that's my sergeant at the door. I seem to be needed. Please forgive me, I won't be a moment.
You've been an awfully long time, Major. Is anything the matter?
Something dreadful has happened. I don't know how to tell you. There's been an accident. Your husband.
What happened? What's happened to Reggie?
I'm afraid he's been shot.
Shot? How badly?
Well, very badly, I'm afraid.
Is he conscious?
I'm afraid he isn't.
Is he dead?
I'm so sorry. He was dead when they found him.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Come along, my dear. Try to calm down. Get her a glass of water, Major Gaze. Oh, Harry, it's you. Thank goodness. Have you heard?
It's all round the club. And to get the water, a good long peg of brandy is what she needs. Boy, stiff brandy.
Cartwright, will you take Mrs. Brunson home?
Yes, of course.
Doctor and I will go along to where the body is.
We'd better get started.
We'll need some rain. I'll send my runner to the police station. We'll get some out there as soon as possible.
Right.
Gang robbery, do you suppose?
Not much doubt. They knew he'd gone into Caballon to get the wages. They lay in wait for him on the way back. Of course, he should never have come alone through the jungle when everyone knows he had a packet of money on him.
Oh, he's done it for years. And he's not the only one.
How on earth are we going to get hold of the fellows who did it?
Awful for Mrs. Brunson. Bad enough at any time, but now, with the baby on the way.
I didn't know that.
Oh, she's keeping it dark. Sylvia knows.
Odd, after all these years.
Oh, it happens, you know. I gather Brunson wouldn't have been too pleased. She told me he didn't like children. She's been waiting for the right moment to tell him. I don't think she got round to it.
You'd think a great-hearted chap like him would be as keen as mustard on having kids.
Well, you never can tell.
And what was the nature of the wound, Dr. Kendall?
Half the face had been shot away. Death must have been instantaneous.
How long had he been dead when you examined him?
Several hours. It's difficult to be precise, given the conditions. I came to the conclusion that he died at around 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
At the point where he'd fallen, the pathway was trodden and confused. Somewhere behind the body, though, the marks of his bicycle wheels were quite clear. He'd been riding straight and steadily. And then they showed that he'd stopped and stood either side of the machine. The prints of his boots were very distinct. He'd obviously stopped there and put his feet on the ground. Then he'd started off again. The wheels wobbled violently, and then he'd crashed.
Thank you very much, Major Gaze. Very clear. And did you come to any conclusion as to why Mr. Bronson had been killed?
Yes, sir. We've established that he left Kabulong carrying a large sum of money in notes and silver. No money was found on the body. The pocket watch and chain he always wore were also missing. I came to the firm conclusion that he'd been attacked by gang robbers who knew he was carrying money. They killed him, then stripped him of everything he had on him.
My husband left the bungalow about 11 o'clock. He said he would have tiffin at Kabulong and be back between 5 and 6. We'd arranged to play tennis at the club that evening and follow it with a little bridge. I asked him if I should wait for him to come home so that we could go along together. He asked me not to. He said he would simply put the money in the safe and come straight on to the club.
I had lunch with Mrs. Bronson at about midday, and then I went out to shoot pigeon. I got back to the bungalow shortly before 5, had a bath and changed for tennis.
Were you shooting anywhere near where Mr. Bronson was discovered?
Not far away.
And did you hear anything unusual?
No, I'm afraid not. That, of course, means nothing, what with the cicadas and frogs and other jungle noises. In any case, I was probably back in the bungalow before he was killed.
We offered a reward of $1,000 to anyone who could help us discover the murderer. Nothing happened. The reward seemed to tempt no one.
A dead end.
So it seemed. But I said to myself, money's no good unless you spend it. The itch to spend those ill-gotten dollars would finally prove intolerable. Sooner or later, someone would start flinging his money about, and then I'd be on to him. All I needed was a little patience.
No. And, how did Mrs. Bronson take you?
I never really knew. Cartwright took her down to Singapore shortly afterwards. Then the company asked him if he'd take over managing Bronson's estate, but he said very naturally that he didn't like the idea. So they put another man in and told Cartwright he could take over this other fellow's job. He moved in at once. A few months later, Olive was born in Singapore. About a year after Bronson's death, Cartwright and Mrs. Bronson were married.
And did that surprise you?
At first, I suppose. On thinking it over, though, I couldn't help confessing that it was very natural. She must have been lonely and rather lost, and I dare say she was grateful for his kindness. As for him, I imagined he was sorry for her. A dreadful position for a woman. She'd nowhere to go. And all they'd been through must have created a bond between them.
Well, I'm sure it did, but... And this money... Did it ever turn up?
Not in the way I'd hoped. A year passed, and to all intents and purposes, the thing was forgotten. If anyone had that hoard bedded away beneath the floor, he was showing superhuman self-control. And then...
Yes.
A Chinaman, a certain Ling Su, was caught trying to pawn Bronson's watch. The pawnbroker was a smart fellow. He recognized the watch. It was pretty distinctive, you know. And he kept the man waiting while he sent for a policeman. Ling Su was arrested and brought to me. I was never so pleased to see anyone in my life. When I catch a criminal, it gives me a little thrill of satisfaction. Well, like bringing off a neat finesse at bridge. At last, the mystery was going to be cleared up.
I find him. I find him.
Answer that. And where exactly did you find it?
In the jungle.
Oh, really, Mr. Ling? Do you often come across expensive watches lying around in the jungle?
I tell you, I find him. I tell you. I'm going along pathway from Kabulong. I go into jungle. There he is on the ground.
And when is all this meant to have taken place?
Yesterday. Huh. You ask boss I work for in Kabulong. He sent me to Alole Peace yesterday in afternoon. You ask him.
I will do that. Meanwhile, I will take you to the place where you say you found the watch. You must show me the exact spot.
Here. This is place I go into jungle.
Well, this place is 5 yards from where the owner was murdered. I warn you, Mr. Ling, the charge could be much more serious than the theft of a watch.
I tell you the truth. Here, come. I'll show you where I found the watch. Here, see, between stones. Watch lie there. I see him shine in sun. I pick him up.
Right, man? If that watch was hidden when Mr. Bronson was killed, the money might have been too. Make a line, you two.
Mr. Ling, spread out there. We'll search from this spot, 50 yards in each direction.
What exactly are we looking for, sir?
A case or wallet containing banknotes. Right, keep your eyes skinned.
Here, I find something.
Oh, well done, Mr. Ring. Now, what have you got there? Let me see.
From the wandering root of a tree, he pulled a messy, mouldering wallet. It had clearly been out in the rain for at least a year, eaten by ants and beetles and God knows what. But it was Brunson's wallet, all right. And inside were the shapeless, mushed-up remains of the Singapore notes he'd got from the bank at Kabulong.
Ah, so whoever had murdered Brunson hadn't done it for the money.
Exactly. Mm. I know the silver wasn't in the wallet, but I was quite certain it was hidden somewhere about. Mm. But it seemed pointless to bother about that in the circumstances.
No, much point. But if it wasn't a gang robbery, as you first thought, why was he murdered? And who would he stop to speak to?
I thought about that. You remember I noticed the print of Brunson's feet on each side of the broad line of the bicycle tyre where he had stopped. He was a heavy man, and the prints were well marked, very distinct. He hadn't just put his feet on the soft sand and taken them off. He must have stopped for at least a minute or two.
Ah, and where Brunson was concerned, that rather ruled out a Malay or a Chinese.
Precisely. What the devil would Brunson have to say to them? And why should he? He was a jovial chap, all right, but he certainly wasn't hail fellow well met with the natives. In any case, he wanted to get home. No, those footprints had always puzzled me, and now, suddenly, I knew the truth. Whoever killed Brunson hadn't done it to rob him. And if he'd stopped to talk with someone, it could only have been with a friend. At last, I knew who the murderer was.
As I've already mentioned, I'm very fond of detective stories. Although it's not a form of fiction I've ever practiced, I have read a good many. And I flatter myself that it's not very often that I haven't solved the mystery before it was disclosed to me by the author. On this occasion, too, I must admit that for some time I'd foreseen what Gaze was going to say. But even so, when at last he said it, I confess it gave me somewhat of a shock.
Good heavens, is that you, Cartwright?
Hello, Bronson.
What on earth are you doing out here?
Oh, I trying my hand at a little pigeon shooting.
Any luck?
Just a couple of brace so far.
Well, I'm going back home to deposit this in the safe. Are you coming?
No, I'm staying out for a bit.
I'll be on my way then. See you later. Don't forget to change for tennis, will you? We're looking forward to the game. Meet you at the clubhouse. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Of course, Cartwright took the money and the watch in order to make it look like the work of gang robbers. He hid them quickly in the jungle. Then he made his way along the edge till he got to the road. He went back to the bungalow, changed into his tennis things, and drove with Mrs. Brunson to the club.
And the child, Olive, hmm?
Cartwright's, of course. Hmm. You saw the likeness yourself. And remember what Dr. Kendall said.
Awful for Mrs. Brunson. Bad enough at any time, but now, with the baby on the way.
I didn't know that.
Oh, she's keeping it dark. Sylvia knows.
Odd, after all these years.
Oh, it happens, you know. I gather Brunson wouldn't have been too pleased. She told me he didn't like children. She's been waiting for the right moment to tell him. I don't think she got round to it.
Why did she never tell him? Because Brunson would have known that he couldn't be the father of the child.
Do you think Mrs. Brunson knew what Cartwright had done?
Sure of it. When I look back on her behaviour that evening at the club, I'm absolutely convinced. She was upset, but not because Brunson was killed. She was upset because I didn't say at once that he was dead. When I told her he was dead, she burst out crying, but from relief. Something dreadful has happened. I don't know how to tell you. There's been an accident. Your husband.
What happened? What happened to Reggie?
I'm afraid he's been shot.
Shot? How badly?
Well, very badly, I'm afraid.
Is he conscious?
I'm afraid he isn't.
Is he dead?
I'm so sorry. He was dead when they found him.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh.
She made Cartwright do it. She planned every detail and every move. He was completely under her influence. He still is.
Do you mean to tell me that neither you nor anyone else ever suspected that there was anything between them?
Never. Never.
But if they were in love with each other and knew that she was going to have a baby, why didn't they just bolt?
How could they? It was Branson who had the money. She hadn't a bean, and neither had Cartwright. He was out of a job. Do you think he'd have got another with that story around his neck? Branson had taken him in when he was starving, and he'd stolen his wife from him. No. They couldn't afford to let the truth come out. Their only chance was to get Branson out of the way. And they got him out of the way.
Well, they could have thrown themselves on his mercy.
Yes, but I think they were ashamed. He'd been so good to them. Such a decent chap. I don't think they had the heart to tell him the truth. They preferred to kill him.
Anything rather than a scene? Hmm? Even a murder?
Perhaps.
Well, what did you do about it?
What was there to do? What was the evidence? That the watch and notes had been found? Anyone could have hidden them at any time. The footprints? Branson might have stopped to light a cigarette. And who could prove that the child a perfectly decent, respectable woman had, 4 months after her husband's death, wasn't his child? No jury would have convicted Cartwright. I held my tongue, and quite soon the Branson murder was forgotten.
I don't suppose the Cartwrights have forgotten.
Oh, I don't know. Human memory is remarkably short and selective, if you want my professional opinion. I don't believe remorse ever sits very heavily on anyone. Once they're sure, they'll never be found out.
I thought once more of the pair I'd met that afternoon. The thin, elderly, bald man with gold-rimmed spectacles, and the white-haired woman with her frank speech and kindly, caustic smile. It was almost impossible to imagine that in the distant past they'd been swayed by so turbulent a passion, for that alone made their behaviour explicable, that it had brought them in the end to such a pass that they could see no other issue than a cruel and cold-blooded murder. Doesn't it make you a little uncomfortable to be with them? Without wishing to be censorious, I'm bound to say I don't think they sound very nice people.
Oh, but that's where you're wrong. They are very nice people. They're about the pleasantest people here. Mrs. Cartwright is a thoroughly good sort and a very amusing woman.
Well, you've had a good many criminals. Are you saying that on the whole, they're no worse than anybody else?
Precisely. A perfectly decent fellow may be driven by circumstances to commit a crime. And if he's found out, he's punished. But he may remain a perfectly decent fellow. If you'd been a policeman, as long as I have, you know it's not what people do that really matters. It's what they are. I tell you, there's one job I shouldn't like.
What's that?
Guards at the Judgment Day.
Nor I.
In Footprints in the Jungle by Somerset Maugham, Dirk Bogart was the narrator, with Patricia Hodge as Mrs. Cartwright, David Collings as Mr. Cartwright, and Geoffrey Whitehead as Head of Police. Other parts were played by Tracy Wiles, Caroline Strong, John Hartley, Stephen Critchlow, and Benedict Wong as Ling Su. Footprints in the Jungle was dramatised by Neville Teller and directed by Janet Whittaker.
The Museum of Curiosity returns to BBC Radio 4 Extra.
The Victoria Falls is about twice as wide and twice as deep as Niagara Falls.
And it's the maddest thing you've ever seen.
Which is handy to know in case we need to hide Niagara Falls somewhere.
Displays of knowledge and intriguing exhibits.